This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Nothing is off limits as host Sophia Franklin dishes on her personal life, like toxic relationships, dating and hookups, and dealing with insecurities. All with humor and real talk. Find Sophia with an F on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to another edition of Spits and Suds. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and a massive thanks to you, the Spits and Suds listeners. We're having a record November, and we truly appreciate it here on Spits and Suds. And so pleased to be joined by our NHL Spits and Suds insider from EP Ringside. He has his own Substack, which is awesome news and notes. It's called Shat Shots. You can also check him out in the movie, the late game movie. Also the author of We Win Here with Steven Meserve of 100 Degree Hockey, which, by the way, had a terrific article today on Jordy Ben. It's the greatness of Sean Shapiro. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here. It's a good week, so to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, too. And it's funny right now. I was we live in the only, Gavin, we work in the only sport where we have to specify that we're talking about American Thanksgiving, because yes. I wrote something for D Magazine today, and when I turned the original copy into my editor there, Mike Pellucci, I had the word American Thanksgiving, and Mike was like, I don't think we need to quantify the word American. It's okay.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's certainly different, but you are in London, Ontario as part of the CHL USA Challenge. Why don't you explain to our Spits and Suds listeners what that is, and kind of a Dallas tie with Vern Fiddler's kid, one of the top prospects, top NHL prospects, Blake Fiddler, playing in this.
Yeah, fun event here. One of those that I've actually been hoping to see for a little while, and I'm glad that they started it this year. It's the USA under 18 team from the National Team Development Program. They're playing tonight here in London, and then they'll also play tomorrow night over in Oshawa against the Team CHL, which is the top 18-year-old draft-eligible prospects from the three Canadian hockey major junior leagues, the Ontario Hockey League, the Western Hockey League, and the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League. So a real fun event to see some of the top Americans from that under-18 team play against some of their actual age peers, which we normally wouldn't get this event. Between how the CHL was structured and how teams do their things. Like, for example, this ties in pretty well, right, to the Dallas tie. It's going to be a real fun event in the spring down in Texas with the U18 World Championships being right down there. And, every single year, USA always sends this under-18 team. I'm going to go watch tonight. That will be the team down for U18 Worlds in Frisco and Allen. But the Canadians don't always send their best under-18s because the length of the OHL and the WHL and the QMJHL playoffs. So we haven't always gotten this chance to see the top 18-year-olds from the CHL and from the USA program play each other. So real fun event that we're going to get to see tonight and tomorrow. And it's set up. They signed a 3-year deal with an option for a fourth year. So really excited to watch this event tonight. Fun Dallas tie, as you mentioned. There's a Dallas native still lives there in the summer and playing for the Edmonton Oil Kings in the WHL is Blake Fiddler is playing for Team CHL, and I chatted with Blake a little bit yesterday. Blake is a big, strong skating 6'4 defenseman. I was joking with Blake yesterday. I'm not sure where his height came from because Vern is 5'10 on a good day, and mom's also not very tall. And so Blake said they think it comes from, there's apparently the family's got a little of Croatian history with some tall family members of like a great grandfather or something like that. So, but Blake is. Blake is probably, I think, for me and the guys over at Elite Prospects, had Blake either 14th or 15th on our draft board for the upcoming draft. And the November, in our last ranking, we'll do our next ranking a couple weeks here in December. So it's kind of a fun Dallas tie. And even though he's playing for Team CHL at this event, he is. He still has the dual citizenship and represented the United States a couple months back at the Hlinka-Gretzky tournament. Might be, depending on what happens with Edmonton in the WHL playoffs, I've heard that Team USA is trying to see if they can get him onto the American team for the U18 Worlds down in Frisco and Allen. So that would be a fun, definitely a fun tie-in for that, for the people listening to the show who go watch in person. So, yeah, I think it's on NHL Network tonight. So
oh, cool.
I think it's on NHL Network tonight and tomorrow night. So if you're listening to this and you've got those that respective channel, I think you can pull it up there. But fun event.
Yeah.
It's a lot of guys who are we did some media day stuff yesterday for Elite Prospects and talking to a Michael Misa and a Porter Martone, two kids that are we all kind of still have this feeling James Hagans, who's playing at BC, is going to go number one, but Misa and Martone are at least in the conversation to maybe push him for that. So we get to watch both of them play tonight too.
That's great. That's great. Well, Robert and I last night, meaning Robert Tiffin, we had all these news and notes, and then the third period happened and we kind of whipped them up. And, you know, we cannot overanalyze, but, you know, we haven't talked to you in a bit, Sean,
yeah.
And one of the things, and now it's crept up to a daily conversation, is the power play.
Yeah.
And, I think Robert brought up a great point where he's like, there's only so much you can change. And I guess I leave the forum open to you. I know it sounds very old school, Sean, but I was telling Robert last night, if you're going to give up that many shorthanded opportunities, switch it to two defensemen for the power play just to protect yourself. But
yeah.
Is there anything else that they could clearly... Pete DeBoer, I think, reached a point last night where, you know, he kept using the term, this is on us. We lost this game because of us. Not to not give Carolina credit, but clearly, you know, he used the term self-inflicted three times.
Yeah. And you look at and it's not just good teams that are doing it to him, right? Like there's the shorthanded goal against by San Jose.
Yeah.
Two games back or whatever it was. It is. I think there's been a bit of, and you've seen where these chances come from. And I went through and watched the game. I watched the game last night, this morning, because I was enjoying the scenery and bars of London last night.
Nice.
So I watched the game back this morning. And you can one of the things that is there's been a bit of a just. Stars have been very passive at the top of their own zone when it comes to the power play. And that's, to me, has been kind of led to some of these breaks going the other way. And it just seems to kind of spiral. And it's effectively two shorthanded goals against, right? Last night, like one technically came right after it expired. But I think it's not necessarily, for me, it's not necessarily putting a second defenseman on the power play. It's more so of thinking about, do we need to change? Do you need to go back to maybe running not from the top? And that's the way I would have a heavy consideration about it. Right now, I think the Stars are trying to give Miro Heiskanen more of a chance to run the top of the power play and everything like that. And I want to be clear on this. I think Miro is a tremendous player. He's one of the best defensemen in the world, but he's not a power play specialist. We got to call it what it is. And maybe going back to more of a power play look where you're running off of a Jason Robertson, running it from the flank. All of a sudden, maybe that's you switch to that point of attack as the priority. And all of a sudden, Robertson operating off the flank as a passer slash shooter option, that does two things for me. One, it puts more of an emphasis on Robertson getting his game going. Maybe that added pressure slash responsibility works. And then the other thing is you turn the puck over along the half wall.
Mm-hmm.
There's time for Miro to effectively
great point.
Cut yeah. it off. So maybe I'm not sold on two defensemen because I don't see I'm a big believer in having your best offensive weapons on your power play, and I don't see a defenseman that makes a better offensive weapon. But maybe you look at pivoting this point of attack. Let's work more from – let's make it more Jason Robertson-centric off the flank and move that and mm-hmm. see where we build on that. That's what I would like to see them try, particularly tomorrow, especially in the next two games, right? The Stars get Chicago and Colorado sandwiched right around Thanksgiving here, and – those are two teams that are one good, one bad, but both have the DNA of willing to take risk for reward.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's something that I would heavily consider before that game tomorrow night against the Blackhawks here and then Colorado on Friday night.
You know, one of the things you tweeted last night was about the second goal, which I think really, to me, was the momentum goal of the game. Really put Carolina back in. They came out flying, a lot more physicality, kind of a basic back to basics kind of look for Carolina. Just a lot of energy in the third period. And you specifically pointed out that second goal as far as Jake Ottinger's role on that. And, you know, I went back after your tweet and I looked at it, and that was kind of confusing how the communication just wasn't there.
Yeah, it's,
it was weird.
Yeah, and so the whole – and no one asked about it post-game, so I don't know what the proper explanation is. And it's weird because it's like – it's – I'm not sure if Ottinger whiffed on the rim around the back of the boards or – if he misheard a communication of like calling out for the puck but he basically just lets the puck go all the way around to Jarvis. And if Ottinger stops that puck behind the net, even if it's not a terribly clean exchange with Harley coming back, that goal never happens. And
right.
to me, everything just evolved from there. I don't know. It's kind of a weird space with Ottinger. Cause like, he was really good the first two periods. You got to give credit where it's due, right? Like, I think he was a reason they're up 3-1 at that time, but you also got to be a player as a goalie, right? And that is a simple, he goes out and stops that puck. The puck never makes its way to Jarvis. Jarvis never makes the pass to Aho and everything like that. And that's really, to me, where the entire game changed on that. So
right.
I'd be curious to learn the truth on, was it a whiff? Like, was it just a whiff and he just missed the puck, which had heart, or was it there's a communication call out and he just, or it was a bad decision. Either way, I'm sure that's something that Ottinger and Jeff Reese, the Stars goalie coach, have had discussion about, probably right on the team playing home last night. I'm sure that's so.
Yeah, I think the whole team kind of was caught by surprise. They go on for a line change. Harley was on the opposite end, but if you notice, he it wasn't like he was rushing to the puck initially.
Yeah,
but he was across the ice, so just a tough timing for that. But you know, that's okay. As I said last night to Spits and Suds listeners, if you go on a 3-game road trip anywhere in this league and come out with 4 out of 6 points, if you can beat Chicago last night, tomorrow night, I think that's a massive win.
Yep.
You know, and they proved that they can beat teams, Minnesota on the road, now Tampa on the road, and playing competitive against Carolina. I'm enjoying what I'm seeing on the road. I think it's just, like we said, the consistency of three periods. And on that note, you have mentioned several times that really kind of the first point in which you start to look at teams as far as their makeup, where they are in the standings, is around Thanksgiving.
Yep.
So we are now at around the Thanksgiving break. And what do you see? Do you see them needing to add anything at this point?
Yeah, I mean, to me, and I wrote something about this in D Magazine, and it's a thing that I talked to a couple scouts and other NHL people about. The big thing with the Stars, to me, is the question of, and it's not a surprise that this is something we're discussing after, because one of the reasons that Chris Tanev was such a good fit for Dallas last year at the deadline and why he's missed this year is someone who effectively protects the net well. Like, that's the one big gap in the Stars game is how well are you going to protect the net in front of you? I thought the Tampa game was particularly noticeable on this because like Anthony Cirelli just lived
his way.
Lived in front of it and no one did anything.
Yeah.
So I don't know who the player is, but I'm struggling to see the in-house solution currently on the NHL roster when it comes to net protection. And this, I think this goes into a larger point right now of you start to think about the Leon Bixel or Bischel, I think is how he wants it pronounced. Like it's been all over the place.
Yeah.
But basically Leon, we start to have the conversation about, is it time to start looking at that option from a size net protective type role? And I think it's a highly worthy conversation. I'm looking forward to, I'll probably watch some Texas film here soon to try to see, to kind of isolate to see where he is on that front myself. But you start to get into that point of, is that the in-house internal solution? Do you do that, or do you have to? And I think you owe it to yourself right now, especially with Lundqvist's injury recently and everything like that. I think now is not a bad time to experiment and learn on that. That's the whole thing. Where if you can, obviously, I think there's a little bit of cap gymnastics you have to do to make it work. I'd have to double check that. I don't have it right in front of me, but I'd like to figure that out now in November and December, as opposed, and then maybe you save an asset and then you don't have to worry about making a trade in February, in January or February. So I've come watching the recent games and how things have gone. I've become more and more of the, I was never a proponent of like put Bixel on the roster to start the season. That was never kind of my view on it, because I wanted to see where things went. And
yeah.
Now I'm kind of like, okay, let's see what we have here, because I think you kind of owe it to yourself to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And that
makes sense.
Yeah.
So when the Stars played Minnesota a few weeks back, Matt Dumba was out of the lineup and then reinserted, and kind of a nice message to the locker room as far as, hey, you know, this is Matt Dumba's home. Good chance for him to come back in. I wonder if the same will be in Chicago tomorrow night with Colin Blackwell getting back in the lineup, because I was telling Robert last night, you know, it was based on injury. It wasn't based on play. And I know Oscar Beck's been terrific, but I do think Blackwell adds some, you know, a little bit of scoring touch on that fourth line. And I like his aggression, his energy, likes to get, you know, in the dirty area. So I'm wondering maybe if that'll be something that happens tomorrow night.
Yeah, I could see you playing off that. I definitely could see it. The question right now for the Stars is, where is the – and I don't know the right answer to this, and I'm going to admit I don't know the right answers. Where do you keep – and I think Bork's been better lately, but it's not like Bork has gone out there and been like, hey, you can't take me out, right?
Right.
Like performance-wise. And so – maybe you take back out, or you take Oscar out and do that and put Blackwell in. But I think there is a, you got to figure it out. You got to, like, as a coach, and this is why you have to make those tough decisions. But I do agree with you. Like, I think you want to put Blackwell in for back this game. I don't know if it's a like for like necessarily, taking back out or doing it something with being a little bit more like message sending to Bork of like, you got to keep earning your spot. I don't know what the right answer is, but I do like the idea of Blackwell coming back in. And I also think against Chicago, against Colorado, two a little bit faster teams, Blackwell probably brings a little bit more to, like, Beck's is a little bit more of a bruising body than Blackwell is. And I think Blackwell's got a little bit more of that foot speed and everything, like, not a ton more, but a little bit more that I think adds a little bit to that. So I would be, long story short, I would be definitely on board with that decision for Chicago.
Well, some nice tests for the Stars. And one of those, you just mentioned Colorado, 7-3 in their last 10. Seems as though they've, you know, you kind of knew they were coming.
Yeah. Here's the thing about them, right? Like, imagine if they had a competent goalie.
Yeah.
Right, like they had the game the other night that was just like a hilarious of, like, a Noonan started, let up 5 goals on 10 shots or whatever, and then Georgiev comes in and, like, Colorado's got to trade for a goalie. That's going to happen at some point. There's like, it's pretty clear the Anunin-Georgiev tandem doesn't work. I know the hot name on the market is always going to be John Gibson, just because of the namesake and everything. But he makes a lot of money, and moving him is going to be tough. But both Colorado and Carolina, who we saw the with Anderson's injury, Kochetkov dealing with the concussion recently, and like Dallas lost to Spencer Martin last night, and Spencer Martin's a fine number three, but not a long-term solution. So you look at kind of two teams that are in that good tier and quote-unquote contenders, like Carolina and Colorado right now should be knocking doors down looking at goalie options. And with the Avalanche, the way that team plays, the performance they're getting, like that team could be much higher in the standings if they had someone competently stopping the puck right now. And that's something you're going to have to be aware of from a Stars perspective this week. And just going forward, like,
right,
it's a team that's also going to get better too, right? Like they bring back Nikushkin, or I'm using Nikushkin. It's funny because I sometimes have to say it Nikushkin just because that's the way Jim Nill would always say it. It's Nikushkin, but Jim Nill would always say Nikushkin. So they bring back Val into the lineup, and he's going to get going. As he gets going, he's going to get better.
Yeah,
we don't know about Landeskog. We know that Colorado team's going to get better and get stronger too. So points are points, right? From a Dallas perspective, this Friday is a big one. So,
yeah, absolutely. You have Chicago, then you have Colorado, then you have Winnipeg on Sunday. So, pretty interesting. Okay, forgot to ask you, quickie. Robert and I were debating it last night.
Okay.
You think Natchez was purposely trying to hit it against Labushkin's skate, or thought of that possibility?
Maybe. I think you look at the way. I think it's a win-win type play,
right?
For on that one, where you either get the cross seam pass or it goes back that way. You got to remember, Carolina is very much a funnel pucks on net team,
mm-hmm.
At all costs, and so I don't know if I have a hard time believing that was the intent, but I also think it's one of those plays where if you're trying to force that one cross seam, that's not a bad like. Second choice. So I don't think it was intentional, but I think it was this is a high percentage play either way, because no matter what, it adds chaos to the mix. And that's really the job of a power play, is to create as much chaos as possible and try to capitalize on it.
I hope B. DeBoer keeps the lines the way they are right now. But one line that now is starting to get the national recognition is Sagan, Marchment, and the key is Matt Duchene. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to call him elite this year, Sean. I mean,
yeah.
He's always been an amazing player, but I just feel as though his confidence on this line is just so tremendous. I mean, he's making play. The backhanded saucer pass the other day was just unreal. Yeah. And then, you know, that 18 seconds in, they score last night. I mean, Marchment almost puts another one in. They're just, you know, fast, quick, high skill set. It's just really, really impressive.
Yeah, and the thing that to me that's most impressive about Duchene, and just kind of the building of a couple years now here in Dallas now, of the it kind of shows the maturity of the game. And
yeah.
Like now, I think last year a lot of Matt Duchene's post-Nashville stuff in Dallas was taking that next step in his career. Your pride gets hurt when you get bought out, call it what it is, right? Like kind of taking that, and now this year there's been a bit of that element of he's been this more responsible player, he's come in, he's done that, and now he's adding back some of those flashes of skill, and that to me is kind of the best combination of it, where it's the you're allowing the hard work and the responsibility of it, but you're also adding in the other flashy elements that have been there before and we know we can do. So that to me is the big one. And like that line's got great chemistry right now. It's rolling along really well. And the thing I like about it too, that's like, we don't know, right? Like with Sagan's, it's been well known, right? Sagan didn't play both games of the back-to-back in Finland. We don't know, like, I guarantee, not guarantee, but like, Sagan's not going to be able to play every game for the rest of the season. I think we just have to call it what it is and know that there's going to be injury stuff with Sagan and what he's dealing with. And I love how much Duchesne and Marchment play. Like, Sagan obviously is a big part of it too, but I love how much Duchesne and Marchment can drive each other. And so if Sagan's not in that night, they can still continue to drive each other. And so that's the other big thing too, see those two kind of come together. And it's two guys who came to Dallas with Duchesne a second chance, right, after getting bought out, and Marchment kind of looking for the next step in his career after dealing with some really, like, hard stuff, like with near the end after his father passed, and he came to Dallas because a lot of the community, the ties that he had to some of the coaches in Dallas. So two guys that have kind of found a bit of a home in Dallas, and that's really cool to see.
I was reading on ESPN, I believe there have been 23 coaching changes since January of 2023. So
it's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really crazy. The Blues making several changes, Columbus having made several changes, but it was really interesting to hear. And I will give credit to Doug Armstrong, who's very candid and said, this was my guy. I had the opportunity to grab him and I grabbed him. I just kind of felt bad for Bannister in a way. Sure. I thought it was kind of a quick pull, but that being said, he believes in Jim Montgomery that much. He offered him a 5-year deal. So wanted to get your thoughts on the Montgomery situation. And I'm wondering if you're a Bruins fan and you see Bruce Cassidy go on to win a Stanley Cup, and if Jim Montgomery has success, you just kind of have to look at Don Sweeney and say, you got to give a little more rope. But at the same time, Bruins fans, they don't want rope. They want action, and they will not allow a rebuild in Boston or any kind of downturn.
Yeah. First off, like, you feel for Bannister a bit, but yeah. I give Doug Armstrong credit for saying out loud, like, the truth, like, hey, the only reason we made the firing was because of who was available, right? I appreciate the honesty and the openness and candor on that. I think Jim Montgomery is a very good regular season coach. I think we saw it in Dallas here. We saw it in Boston. Jim Montgomery, the big question will always be, will he get over that edge in the playoffs? And we'll see what happens. I think we've gone further and further down now where hockey coaches have just become it's basically become the equivalency of what happens so often now in European soccer, where you just see managers get changed in European soccer all the time. Anyone who follows that sport will know how common it is for a team might be great for 2 years and have two bad months, and all of a sudden they're changing managers. I think it's just become such a norm where that's why coaches are, when they do sign, they want that longer deal because it's the security of Jim Montgomery might not coach to the end of that 5-year deal, but he will be paid till the end of that 5-year deal. And I think that's kind of I was wondering when Jim Montgomery would resurface after the Bruins let him go, because and someone asked me about this in Detroit, if like, oh, do you think they would consider him? And I'm like, I don't know why he would want the Detroit job right now, just because he's getting paid through the end of the season. He could just go on TV and get some extra money that way. But St. Louis is, after Jim Montgomery got let go in Dallas after the act of unprofessional conduct, he moved back to St. Louis. His wife is from there. He's got in-laws. His in-laws are there. They found a community, and that's really where he got his feet back under him and everything like that. And so St. Louis actually made perfect sense for Montgomery, because you go back to a spot that is effectively home. You go back to a spot where you found community before, and it's more of a decision about life and family choice than necessarily how good the hockey team is. Like, I think that hockey team will be better with Jim Montgomery. I don't think they're a playoff team. I don't think they're a playoff team this year in the Central, but I think, credit to Jim Montgomery for landing on his feet so quickly with that. But like, man, Gavin, the coaching thing, it's a rough business now. We were having, we did a media day here yesterday with a bunch of those kids who are all the draft eligibles for the CHL kids. And we were talking, just like doing some fun questions with guys of like, oh, after you're done playing someday, would you want to be a coach or a GM? And like one of the points, like someone said, is like, it's like, oh, well, I'd want to be a GM because coaches don't get to keep their job very long. Coaching is a job you pick where you're getting recycled all over the place. It's a bit of a thankless job at times right now. So
yeah, I think it could be a fair comparison, college football to NFL football, mm-hmm. where a lot of coaches have found happiness at the college rank. Sure, you want to try NFL because it's the elite level, but at the same time, I'm wondering with the emergence of college hockey, if coaches are wondering, you know what, I have a great base here, my team's successful, I'm good at this. You know, maybe I'll stay here. I know coaches, they there's always that, can I do it at the next level? I think with anyone in any business, there's always the, can I do it at the next
correct.
Level?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, like, let's look at the biggest example is David Carl, right? David Carl is the coach at Denver. He's won 2 national titles as a head coach there, 1 World Junior Gold, is going to coach the United States at World Junior here in about a month and a half, and is a hot name that comes up for any NHL coaching job. If David Carl's got he's got a young family, he's only like, I mean, it's funny. David Carl's the one who's going to make me feel old someday because he's actually younger. I'm 35 and David Carl is younger than I am. Like David Carl has an amazing career already. And he's got this incredible resume. He's only 35 years old. And, but from his perspective is he has a job for life at Denver if he wants it, right? Like based off what he does recruiting wise, success, that job is his forever. So I feel someday he will go to the NHL. I feel like it'll happen at some point, but he has the, why would you leave for a middling team? Why would you leave for a team that's going to be in a rebuild? Why would you not leave for the ideal job? And that to me is something that I think is, there's with college hockey, and college hockey is about to get even more interesting right now with all of the CHL players being now eligible for the NCAA and everything. But like, Brandon Arado, the coach at the University of Michigan, I think he's got like a clause in his contract at Michigan where like every year he doesn't leave for a pro job, like he gets like a $50,000 bonus or something like that. Like it's, if you're a college hockey coach, it's a really good gig if you can get it because of the job security and the and just like the life schedule too. Like, yes, you have recruiting that makes it busy, but like it's
Well, speaking of bonuses and bumps, Mike Pelucci is going to join us on Spits and
Excellent.
Suns. So I will try my best to get you a raise. He is the sports editor for D Magazine. And my job on this Spits and Suds podcast is to get a bump for you, Mr. David Castillo and Mr. Robert Tiffin. So I will try my best, sir. I'm really excited to talk to him.
Yeah, I like one of the things I really like about I've worked with Mike a lot before on both D Magazine and that my prior stops as well. Like one of the things that I really like about Mike is he's an editor that brings the best out of writers. And there's been times where I've worked with Mike on things where I've had an idea or we've worked on something and he said, that's great. What if we did this too? And I love I like being pushed on things, and that's something where Mike does a good job of pushing his writers to be better. He does a good job of understanding their strengths. So, yeah, he does a great job over at D, and he's also a hell of a writer too. Like that's the other thing. There's some people who are good editors, and that's really that's their lane, and it's a very valuable skill. But there's also some people who also have the ability as a writer as well. And so, Mike's stuff is as when Mike writes, it's just as good as when he edits. So I'm glad you're having him on the show. So that's
yeah, great. No, absolutely. He deserves a stick tap, and he deserves the publicity because of the publicity he's brought to the Stars with writers like you, David, and Robert. All right, my friend, we'll enjoy the tournament up in London. Yep. That's really, really cool.
Yep.
Don't go too heavy around the bar scene. You know, you are a celebrity. People are going to be looking for you. People are going to say, are you the goalie from the Lake movie? People are going to ask for your autograph, my friend. So just let me know if you can.
I did have one of the things I love about when I'm up here is it's I'm not trying to be insensitive about the joke, but it's like we just had me and Cam from Elite Prospects. We just had had a late lunch here before I came on, hopped on this call, and I got a pound of wings for $7.50 Canadian, which is like the best deal I think you'll ever find for a pound of wings. Like, I think that's exchange rates, like $5 for a pound of wings.
So nice.
That's been one of the best finds so far outside the hockey of this. So,
I love that. Absolutely love that. Well, we appreciate you taking just a few minutes to join us. We love your insight on the Stars and also the NHL and more. So you can catch Sean, read the article that just came out in D Magazine, and also EP Ringside, which he's in charge of. It's a terrific website. Check that out. Shap Shots is his Substack, where you can subscribe and get all kinds of information. He's, of course, is a movie star with the late game movie. I'm sure Rec League starts up at some point as he tries to defend the cup. I don't know how you're going to have time to play Rec League hockey with all that you have going on, but somehow he will try to defend his cup as the goalie of his Rec League team. Oh, yeah, the book is called We Win Here with Steven Mazur. The list just keeps going and going and going, and for good reason. Sean, you're the man. We'll talk to you soon.
Always fun, Gavin. Always good. And happy Thanksgiving to everyone for listening. And it's been good. And best to everyone. Best to everyone and their families during this time of year.
So. Absolutely. And the shows roll on. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode of Spits and Suds. Thank you so much for your support. Thank you for listening. I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Have a great day, everyone.